time for overtime.
Stop what you're doing and listen.
In the world of sports, it's all about the playmakers in today's headlines, from locals to the pros, with interviews from local standouts and sports all-stars across the country that will have you talking.
Oh, my goodness.
Touchdown.
Hear from coaches to players, sports analysts, and broadcasters who are a part of the action every day. Overtime, now with Burt Ramin on ESPN 102.3 AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Welcome in to a beautiful Thursday, June 4th edition of Overtime. Dustin Baker, Stone Baker, and some donuts in studio today as we open it up and introduce a new era of the Minnesota Vikings. Nolan Teasley is your new general manager. He was introduced yesterday as the new GM of those Minnesota Vikings. The new operational order, pecking order, whose boss is who do I report to? In Minnesota is all laid out, finally, clearly, by the Wilf family. We'll dive right into that news, pecking order, and everything you need to know from the Minnesota Vikings territory with Dustin Baker here before too long. Also, some very interesting, very awkward comments from J.J. McCarthy. Kyler Murray says all the right things. J.J. McCarthy, not really. We'll dive into that commentary that certainly moved the needle towards the end of the week last week, and more in hour number one. Welcome in, Vikings Thursday, June 4th edition of Overtime. We'll also read and react to the big trades this week in the NFL. A.J. Brown to the New England Patriots, as predicted, and Myles Garrett to the L.A. Rams, much to the chagrin of just about everybody. We'll dive into those and talk about the Rams or the field. If you had to pick today, you're taking the LA Rams, taking the field, it would be very wise to take the field. But the Rams feel like a juggernaut at this stage in early June. A lot of football to be played and won't start being played until the month of August in preseason. So we'll digest all of that news, dive into the Rams, the shakeup in the power rankings, and more in the National Football League in a jam-packed, locked and loaded hour number one. Hour two, headlines and highlights. We'll also dive in to the NBA Finals last night, where we've got a series, people. Jalen Brunson is just different. Goes down with a knee injury early, goes off to the locker room, and it really activated a lot of PTSD for fans from recent years, where we saw guys like Damian Lillard, guys like Jason Tatum, guys like Tyrese Halliburton limp off or have to be helped off the floor, and then the series just fizzles out the way that it goes. Now, Jalen Brunson did not end up needing long-term help. They had a little wrap on his knee, got back into the game, then had his ankle stepped on, yelling at the ref. They found a way to get the job done. Knicks win it 105-95. Jalen Brunson had 30 quietly. Not an efficient game. Ton of shots. 30 points for Brunson. But the real star of the show last night, Karl-Anthony Towns and the other ancillary pieces, Landry Shamet and others, engineering the Knicks to a victory. Cat had 18 points, 12 rebounds, and went toe-to-toe with Victor Wembanyama in a Game 1 road win for New York. Latest from the NBA and the NHL. And before we're done, the latest news from the National Football League, where the Packers are in the news for a good reason and the Packers are in the news for a bad reason. Micah Parsons going to be out until mid-October, according to Micah Parsons yesterday. And then moments ago, the Green Bay Packers checked off another big contract item in the offseason, landing a big deal with one Christian Watson, NDSU Bison alum. Close, but not a first-round pick. I think it was pick number 33 or 34 five years ago for the Green Bay Packers. Watson, a mega deal extension to stay in Green Bay, and I'll tell you why. It's a bargain on numerous fronts. In addition to that, we'll get you the other NFL news you need to know. Rehab update on one George Kittle, as well as the good, the bad, and the ugly before we are done today. Full disclosure, tech difficulties today. I can't get any audio coming into the system. I got a couple clips in before it freaked out on me. But here we go. Into the scorecard. NBA Finals. Knicks win 105-95 for a 1-0 lead in the series. Victor Wembanyama, good. Not great. 26 points, 12 rebounds, 3 blocks last night. The Knicks better. They trailed by 14 points in the second half, found their way back to a win, and that is just the cardiac nature of the New York Knicks this year. Game two going to be Friday night from San Antonio Spurs. A little bit more favored in game two than they were in game one. 5.5, the number to know this morning at DraftKings Sportsbook. Tonight is game number two of the Stanley Cup Final from Raleigh. Canes took it on the chin in game one via a come-from-behind win for Vegas. Golden Knights and Canes tonight from Raleigh, 7 o'clock on ABC. Carolina a -162 favorite on the puck line. Major League Baseball on the scorecard. Detroit stacking some wins this week. They win 7-2 in Tampa yesterday. Minnesota was going for the sweep of the Chicago White Sox, and they got anything but that yesterday. Shut out for the first time this year. Here's Chris Atterbury wrapping things up yesterday afternoon.
Well, it was a beautiful Wednesday afternoon at Target Field, and after toppling Davis Martin the night before, the Twins gunning for a sweep of the White Sox with Taj Bradley on the mound. But the White Sox had other ideas. Sam Antonacci, the first of his four hits to open the ballgame. And then it was Miguel Vargas, the first of a career-high tying five walks issued by Bradley. Andrew Benintendi singled, and the bases were loaded with nobody out, and it was uh-oh time. Colson Montgomery struck out, but Chase Meidroth walked to force in a run. And then it was Jacob Gonzalez. Gonzalez 0-for-4, four strikeouts the night before, but he changed that script. And this one hit through the left side, and that's going to be a base hit. Here comes Vargas. Benintendi will round. He's going to score as well. Meidroth goes to third. White Sox jumping all over Taj Bradley here in the opening frame. It's a two-run single the other way for the rookie, Jacob Gonzalez, in his fourth big league game. Bradley did not give up another run over a laborious outing. Just those four runs over 4 2/3. He threw 104 pitches. In fact, the Twins wouldn't give up another run until the eighth inning, when we saw an RBI single from Miguel Vargas and also a two-run homer from Andrew Benintendi. But I tell you what, the Twins couldn't do anything against Eric Fetty. They didn't get a hit until there were two outs in the fifth inning, a single by Luke Keyshaw. They totaled just five hits in the ballgame, and in fact, they're shut out for the very first time this year, meaning that only the Baltimore Orioles have yet to be blanked in the big leagues this season. The White Sox salvage one. Twins win the series but lose the finale. 8-0 Chicago on your home for Twins baseball.
That's Chris Atterbury yesterday. 8-0 Chicago. That would be ugly. It was ugly, but Minnesota did take the first two games of the series. New records for both teams. White Sox are 33-29. Minnesota falls to 29-34. Here's Twins manager Derek Shelton postgame.
Yeah, 2 out of 3. I mean, against a team that beat us last week, and we played well in two games today. We just, you know, we got behind early and couldn't climb out of it.
That's Twins manager Derek Shelton. Minnesota now 29-34. They open up a series today at home against division rival Kansas City. 6 o'clock pregame, 6:40. The official start time. Other notable finals yesterday across Major League Baseball. Cleveland beat the Yankees 5-4. Kansas City doubled up and then some against Cincinnati 5-2. San Francisco blanks Milwaukee in Milwaukee 1-0. St. Louis over Texas 5-3. The A's hand the Cubs another loss 5-4. By the way, we're not talking enough about just how bad the Chicago Cubs have been lately. One of the better teams in baseball just about 2, 3, 4 weeks ago. Now with a record of just 32-30 and a full 5 games behind Milwaukee for the top spot in the NL Central. Speaking of bad baseball teams, the Colorado Rockies lost again yesterday against the LA Angels 11-4. Their new record 24-39. Again, out of Major League Baseball early on today. Guardians at Yankees 12-35. Giants at Brewers. A's at Cubs. Royals and the Twins. The very light slate for area teams. Royals and Twins collide 6:40, 6 o'clock. Your pregame coverage right here on the Treasure Island Baseball Network. French Open updates on the women's side. Let's take a look at that scorecard. Marta Kostyuk meeting Mira Andreeva. See if I can get you score updates here on the show live while we take a look from Roland Garros. That's right. Mira Andreeva took care of business against Marta Kostyuk 6-1, 6-3. And then in game two, match two of the day on the women's side, semifinal, is Diana Schneider, fresh off a win over top seed Arena Sabalenka. She is currently tied in set number one against Maya Swalinska. Doing my best on the names here. 5-5 through set number one at Roland Garros. Men's side yesterday, Flavio Cobolli took care of business against four-seeded Felix Auger-Aliassime, 4-6, 6-4, 6-4, 6-4. Matteo Arnaldi defeated Matteo Berrettini, 7-5, 5-2. Berrettini retired from then on out, which sets up the Friday semifinals for the men. Tomorrow morning, 7:30, it's Jacob Mensik meeting Alexander Zverev. And at noon tomorrow, Matteo Arnaldi against Flavio Cobolli in an all-Italian semifinal from Roland Garros. That ladder match is at noon. And a reminder, D1 Softball World Series game one yesterday. Texas all over Texas Tech, 7-3 the final. Longhorns lead 1-0, which means they're one win away from another national championship. Game two tonight, 7 o'clock on ESPN between the Longhorns and the Red Raiders. With that, let's dive across the table to our friend Dustin Baker, live in studio, VikingsTerritory.com, Vikes Now, the YouTube channel, as well as DraftHuddle.com. Good to have you back, my friend. How you doing?
Not bad. We kind of hit the slow part of the NFL calendar. It's inevitable, and it will last until about late July. But since we have not talked in about 2 weeks here, we have plenty of to catch up on.
Certainly do. You guys got a big trip coming up. I just got back from a big road trip all the way out to Colorado. We certainly have a lot to catch up on. Minnesota Vikings in the news for a lot of good reasons here. They find their next general manager. There's a little bit of that funny, awkward rift between JJ and Kyler Murray, or we're looking into it as a rift. It's really not much, but certainly funny commentary. We'll dive into that here in a little while. But as we talk about the NFL, certainly this week, pretty fun with all the what-ifs and the movement of the two player trades that turned into three total players, with Jared Verse included, many draft picks and four total teams. What say you about the drama and the trades this week in the NFL?
It felt like these general managers were just waiting until June 1st, which is kind of a magical date in NFL salary cap lore when everything resets and a lot of teams get some extra funds and players can be traded with less financial pain. So it's as if they were like, all right, now we can pull the trigger on these. My immediate reaction, which is sustainable now, is you kind of start to look at the NFC and think, well, what's even the point here? Mm-hmm. Because it looks like a super team. They were the Super Bowl front runner by a smidgen before the Myles Garrett trade, and now it's by leaps and bounds. So it's also funny that the Rams had that strategy probably, you know, since 2016, 2017, where you trade all of your picks to stack veterans who you know are bona fide commodities. That strategy worked in 2021. And the moment that they started to, all right, we're going to start drafting players, they traded Jared Verse, like the one first rounder they got after abandoning that strategy. So it's kind of funny that he's back to his old tricks, Les Snead. The only thing I guess that could stop them would be a Matthew Stafford injury, because they'd have to pivot to Ty Simpson or, you know, give Russell Wilson a call or something like that. Otherwise, for an article I was writing about the Vikings, I did a deep dive on the depth chart of the Rams, and it's absurd how many good players they have before you even start to look at their depth guys. So, yes, I'm very worried about the NFC.
And again, in the NFC alone, there are a lot of teams that you would consider good to very good. You can throw Tampa or maybe a resurgent Atlanta, New Orleans into the bottom end conversation of that good to very good. Tampa, maybe. But outside of that, you got Chicago to worry about, Philadelphia, you got San Francisco, Dallas could be feisty. I know I've heard that before. Seattle, reigning Super Bowl champs, Minnesota could be a double-digit win team at best. You got D.C. with their young quarterback. They could be better. Detroit, Green Bay, and the L.A. Rams. That is just in one conference of the NFL. It's pretty darn absurd. And if you were to forecast a team that you like just as much as the Rams, is there anybody close, and who is it in the NFC? Is it Seattle?
No, the only thing that I don't think there is even remotely a contender. I mean, maybe if the Lions had a magical season, their depth chart is still fantastic, but it's still not like the Rams. Mm-hmm. There's always a chance that the Eagles get back on track and then they turn into the recent juggernaut that we've seen. They seem to have gone through some doldrums now, chemistry wise. I don't think anybody will be surprised by November if the Eagles are back. So I'd put them there as a threat. The only thing that will give me solace about derailing the Rams is what will be a brutal schedule, because they're going to have to play the 49ers twice, Seahawks twice, then they can beat up on the Cardinals. So they live in one of the toughest divisions. So they will have to really go through a lot with the 49ers and Seahawks to get to the promised land. They almost did it last year. I don't see anything that can stifle these guys. The only thing I would think of is usually when there is a sports team that we are in awe of, where like something bad happens to, you know, throw it off. I mean, maybe not the Warriors with Durant and Curry and Klay Thompson, but right now that's kind of how the Rams roster feels after they got Myles Garrett. Like, there's no mystery whatsoever if Myles Garrett is good. He's going to be elite there, and they didn't need another elite player.
And it feels a little different because we had this conversation yesterday or the day prior about the super team and everybody getting fooled because they added this and they added that. The Rams were already the Super Bowl favorite. This is not like a Philadelphia Eagles. I'm trying to fetch the year, but when they got Vince Young and Ronnie Brown and I think it was Nnamdi Asamoah and a couple others, I can't remember the exact year, but that offseason everybody was talking about, oh, that's a super team. That's the dream team. And it fell apart. They weren't anything special. The Rams are already really darn special, and they added, they got a lot better. But that being said, what did you make of the Browns' return in the trade? Because they get Jared Verse, who last week, if you ask any casual NFL fan, says that dude is a problem, going to continue to get better. That's a good young player. That is a big trade piece and a factor in this trade for Cleveland. What did you make of their overall return?
If the Rams don't win the Super Bowl, there'll be like a 30 for 30 about it on ESPN. So Myles Garrett's 30 years old. And edge rushers can usually play longer than your average bear. Not like Calais Campbell, who's plays on the interior. He's going to be 40. But you should expect that Garrett has at least five seasons left. When I saw this return, I do think Jared Verse is good. But I thought this wasn't quite enough. They didn't pay a premium superstar tax, in my opinion, to get Garrett. I also felt bad for Jared Verse. He went from a Super Bowl contender to a team that really doesn't even know who his quarterback is right now. Cleveland's often the butt of jokes. The return to me should have had at least one more notable draft pick, whether or not you could squeeze a first rounder or a second rounder, because Myles Garrett is going to the Hall of Fame. He's, I would say, a top five, top three edge rusher, as is if he retired today, like based on his talent. And if you know you're getting that type of asset, that there's no ifs, ands, or buts about whether or not he's going to translate to your system, I think the Browns could have got a little bit more. And you'll have to reiterate, too, like this is a franchise and a general manager who pulled the trigger on the Deshaun Watson trade. So it's not like their track record screams like, well, they know what they're doing. There is a chance that they end up winning the trade. And Jared Verse, certainly has more youth than Garrett. But the thing I get stuck on is that we already know who Garrett is, and we hope that the eventual first rounder that the Browns have turns into something that's a quarter of as good as Garrett.
On the other trade, the one that was very predictable, the A.J. Brown to New England Patriots, there was a little bit of kerfuffle that it might not happen with the Vrabel-Rossini situation. It ends up going through. What did you make of that? Because Philly's going to be aggressive with their newfound funds and flexibility, and also the 2028 first rounder. Next year's pick is just a fifth round pick. So that's really not much, respect to the fifth rounders that panned out in the NFL, of course, included. What did you make of that trade in particular, how it shakes up? And Drake May's got a very upgraded wide receiver core this year.
The first disclaimer that I will give, and this applies to the Vikings as well, is why do teams keep trading with Howie Roseman? Mm-hmm. It's risky business. And this is another example. I will point out that Vrabel has history with A.J. Brown, so this doesn't necessarily have to be like a total like Rossini masterclass. Like, these two already go back. Let's face it, Drake May needed a target. Like, this is a wide receiving squad last year that had Stephon Diggs, Kayshon Boutte, Kyle Williams, and then other guys who most casual fans have no idea who they are. It's upgraded a little bit, but it doesn't have Diggs. It's Romeo Dobbs, Boutte, and now it's A.J. Brown. So to see what Drake May can do with a full stable of weapons, I do like this move. A.J. Brown is what, going to be 29? Mm-hmm. So you probably have three seasons to get this right. Now, the Patriots were just in the Super Bowl, so they can strike while the iron is hot. I do like this move for the Patriots because we have no clue what Drake May can do with somebody as dynamic as A.J. Brown currently is, with respect to Diggs, who was good last year, but is well into his 30s.
And certainly a couple big trades have turned the NFL upside down this week. The Minnesota Vikings have found their next general manager. Nolan Teasley is his name. I rebooted the computer in here, so we got to stay on this this segment for a little longer. Give me your take on initial thoughts on the hire of Teasley, and then we'll kind of can for next segment in regards to takeaways from the presser.
My initial thought when that tweet hit was, oh, they really did choose the outsider, huh? Mm-hmm. Most of the candidates, Rob Brzezinski included, that the Vikings interviewed had some sort of connection, link, tie to the Vikings from years past. That's the way the Wilfs like to do things. And if you listen to our show here for the last month, I kept saying that this is probably going to be something where there's a custom setup where we're wondering what the guy even really does. I had that half right. I think we can still assume that Kevin O'Connell is going to be some sort of percentage in charge of the Vikings decision-making, hopefully collaborative with Teasley. But I like this move because a couple things. You got the guy who is known for, you know, personnel. His background is scouting and personnel. The track record there is fantastic for drafting players in Seattle, especially as of late. And this team just won the Super Bowl. Teasley has Super Bowl shine. Anytime you hear that the other team's fans or the other team's coworkers don't want that guy to leave, you know that you got a good hire. And let's face it, Teasley does not have a very high bar to clear to be a better drafter than Kwesi Adofe-Mensah. The main problem for the Vikings right now is that coming off their competitive rebuild a couple of years ago, they should have a young, hungry roster. They have a middle-of-the-road age roster that wants to win right now, but because of so many shoddy draft classes, you're going to sign guys like Jonathan Allen last year and Javon Hargrave when you should already have those guys preloaded. Like Lewis Cine and Andrew Booth should be parts of this secondary, and we don't have to worry about free agents, but they're not there. So the Vikings have had a supplement. Now with Teasley, you get a clean slate. You can start to draft like a normal GM. We just want average. We want to get back to average, and if he happens to be good, great. I do like the hire because it shows that the Wilfs recognized that Kwesi had poor drafts, and it's time to fix that, because if you continue to do that, you're going to drive your franchise into the ground.
Let me talk to you about action items for Nolan Teasley. Obviously, right now it's glad handing time, meeting everybody, introducing yourself. When it comes down to it, the Packers have extended two different players on their roster recently. Are there still any other extension candidates out there for Minnesota in the weeks ahead? Because we're in the dry spell period. This is the time for contract extensions, some bottom of the roster churning and signings. Is there anybody else out there on the Vikings action item list that might need to have a new contract in the first portion of Teasley's tenure as GM?
Yeah, there are too many. I wrote about this last weekend. Typically for a team or the Vikings, when you head into the summer, you have about one or two main guys that you start to wonder, when's he going to get his deal?
Mm-hmm.
The Vikings have about six guys, including Blake Cashman. And then I think eventually Byron Murphy will need a new contract. The main one is Brian O'Neill. He is a stalwart of the Vikings offensive line. He was picked in 2018. Even when the offensive line wasn't very good in 2018, 2019, and 2020, he was the staple. And he signed an extension in 2021. That thing is finally coming home to roost. It was one of the rare deals where he didn't squawk and request more money. He's going to need an extension. I think he's only, 30, 31 or so. He'll get that, and then they'll probably lower the cap hit this year so they have some flexibility for the trade deadline, you know, more money if they want to make deals. I would say Blake Cashman is the other one to monitor. He's 30. You never want to pay an off-ball linebacker that's 30 or older that much, but he's really central to what Brian Flores does in the middle of the defense. One of the dirtiest little secrets about Vikings football right now is that the list of next year's free agents, at least on paper, is humongous. So they're in it to win it this year. That makes extensions more plausible right now, especially for O'Neill. But just remember that when we get to next offseason, the list of free agents, unlike this year that only really had Jalen Naylor and Ryan Wright, next year's list of free agents, especially guys that you know, is huge.
Lastly, here in the first segment, a beefy first segment, still working on this darn computer to come back to life as we're hanging out with Dustin Baker here. Russell Wilson, nice little touching video. It has me in my feels as a Wisconsin fan. He was so darn special. Best quarterback in a single season in program history in Madison. Phenomenal year. I think he only threw four interceptions and 31-ish touchdowns that season for the Badgers. Calls it a career. The last 3-4 years, 5 years of his career have not been too kind, so it's kind of fizzled out a little bit. But if you had to say today, and we can look at the stats a little bit deeper, because head-to-head against Eli Manning, Phillip Rivers, Matt Ryan, those types, Russell Wilson's right there. Hall of Famer in your book, or is he going to be a wait-and-see kind of guy?
I think he will be a Hall of Famer. I don't know that it's first ballot, and I can't believe I'm saying this. If you'd asked me this in 2020 or 2021, I would have been like, are you kidding me? Mm-hmm. This guy is one of the best quarterbacks I've ever seen, especially in the fourth quarter. He hurt himself by leaving Seattle. I don't know if he had a choice, but he looked pretty darn mid in Denver. Sean Payton wanted nothing to do with him. And then Pittsburgh, and then last year with the Giants. When the Broncos made that now heinous trade that they've recovered from, nobody, including me, considered that Russell Wilson would encounter a perhaps age-related decline. And he really, like that deal, I remember when the Broncos got him, it felt like, man, they mean business. And he just wasn't quite the same guy. So he will be an interesting case study in 5 years, assuming he doesn't, you know, come back and retire. If the first, let's see, 9 seasons of your career that were Pro Bowl, that were had you as consistently the top 10 quarterback, are those washed out or negated by 3 or 4 mid crummy seasons where you probably should have been a QB2 for most of the time? I think he'll deserve, I think we will start to forget about his stint in Pittsburgh or New York. Like, mind you, those weren't awful. He just wasn't himself, the Hall of Fame guy. And I will point out that just like I mention on here somewhat frequently that Aaron Rodgers is the almighty Viking killer, in recent history, that was Russell Wilson too. There was a stretch, I kid you not, from 2012 until 2021 where the Vikings and Seahawks played 7 times and the Seahawks won all 7 games. And that was because of this son of a gun, Russell Wilson, who usually came up really clutch late in those contests.
Certainly a lot to debate, a lot to talk about for those Minnesota Vikings moving forward. We'll take our first break of the day, come back with more of Overtime after this, including more on Nolan Teasley and the opening press conference as the new general manager, I believe an additional title, director of football operations, something of that nature, total control over the roster decisions, and one big update on Rob Brzezinski. He is staying with the Vikings, but who does he report to? That news coming up next on a Thursday edition of Overtime.
Streaming live online and with the app, this is Overtime with Burt Rameen on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Right back with you on this Thursday, June 4th edition of Overtime. Lots of Minnesota Vikings news to digest. I'm very excited to talk about this awkward high school dubbed conversation between J.J. McCarthy and Kyler Murray, along with Dustin Baker here in a moment. But we're going to welcome in the third wheel, and a very welcome third wheel during the summertime, Stone Baker, to this mic right now. Stone, welcome back, man. How is summer treating you so far? My kids and I, we just got back from vacation. You're about to go on vacation. How you been, my friend, and how was the school year for you?
Oh, yeah. The school year's been crazy, man.
So you're on to now fourth grade. Is that correct, coming up after the summer?
Yeah, I can't believe we're already done with third grade.
What did you learn this year? What was your favorite subject?
Oh, God.
Your math scores are top notch, yeah. So I'm gonna guess that's around there.
Yeah, math is up there.
Math. Okay, well, hey, I want you to tell the audience the trivia question that I did not get, and see if anybody out there can rack their brain quickly and get it. Give me that state-based U.S. state-based trivia question that you stumped me with a second ago.
Well, before we get into that, let me say the other one.
Yeah, that's fine. Go for it.
So does anyone know what the biggest country in the world is, which is landlocked?
Landlocked. So the biggest landlocked country in the world. You already told me the answer, so I'm not going to say it out loud. We'll give people a minute or two to think about it. Think about big continents here. The biggest continent out there. What's the answer?
Well,
drum roll, please.
It's Kazakhstan.
Kazakhstan, whatever. However you say it.
Because you guys make an argue because it touched a lake, but is that really an ocean?
No. So if the lake is landlocked, then it's a lake, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I mean, unless you're the Caspian Sea or the Red Sea, because those are landlocked, but they can be called seas, I guess. I don't know the exact definition, but typically speaking, you're landlocked, you're a lake or a sea, I guess. What's your state-based trivia question today for the folks?
So this is going to be really hard to get. He couldn't even get it.
I couldn't get it. I'll admit that. It took me a while, and I could not get it. I didn't come up with an answer.
Me and my mom couldn't get it either.
Okay, good. Yeah. So it doesn't make me feel... You didn't tell me that you also didn't get it.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, so what is the only U.S. state which has the order U-S-E in it?
All right, use. So the letters U-S-E in order of a U.S. state. I could not think of this at all. In order of the name of a U.S. state. I'm going to give you guys 20-30 seconds. I had about 20-30 minutes and I still couldn't get it because I'm not very smart. But I'll get you the answer here right now. Stone, USC in the middle of a state name in order. USC. What is the correct answer to that question?
Well,
you're playing for time here.
The correct answer is Massachusetts.
Massachusetts. There you go. And lastly, before we move on, talk about some Vikings drama in the quarterback room. You got a big trip coming up, man. You're heading to Italy. We'll get a full preview from you next week. I think you guys are in on Tuesday of next week. What are you most looking forward to, or what are you most inspired to see in Italy coming up in just a few short days for you?
Honestly, man, like, all of it, it's going to be fun after all.
Yeah.
But, like, we're going to see the Leaning Tower of Pisa. That's going to be damn cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to see the Colosseum towards the end, I think.
Yep.
And then we're going to the Vatican, which I'm excited about.
Yeah, sir.
And another fact for you guys, the Vatican is so small, it doesn't got an airport.
Doesn't have an airport. Well, luckily, the Italians have a lot of airports, I guess, around the Vatican. That's Stone Baker on a Thursday. Big trip coming up for you guys, Dustin. We'll get a full preview and a full recap when you guys get back. Mm-hmm. Looking forward to hearing about and seeing a lot of the Italian voyage of the Baker family. Let's talk awkward. Let's talk J.J. McCarthy. The commentary kind of blown out of proportion. It's the offseason, after all. I don't really remember what Kyler Murray said. Seemed like he said most of all the good things. But J.J. McCarthy basically said, you know, in high school, when you're sitting in a room, that's kind of what it's like. And the coach's job is to coach us up as best as we can. That's essentially what he said, which somebody followed up with, is it awkward at all? He said, awkward? I don't know. It's kind of like in high school. And all my thought was in my mind is, the most awkward part of everybody's life is high school. So to say it's not awkward, but yeah, it's like high school, means I think it might be a little awkward there in Minnesota. What did you make of the commentary? I know it's a nothing burger, but fun to talk about.
Okay, so two things here. The first is the Vikings haven't really had a true quarterback camp battle in eons. And if this is what we're going to do on every single detail, I'm going to lose my mind. Mm-hmm. Like, let's just let it play out, people. I don't need to psychoanalyze every single statement, but I did because the social media demanded it. And here's what I came up with. You watched both comments. You were correct about McCarthy saying, you know, it feels like high school's two guys are in the same kind of room. And when they asked Kyler Murray about it, he said, well, I have unwavering confidence. I'm a mentor now in this league. I've been in this league since 2019. Kyler Murray gave the NFL quarterback answer. Mm-hmm. J.J. McCarthy's problem, if you saw that interviewer exchange, is he told the truth.
Yep.
He said what his emotions were. Like, he didn't say, oh, no, it's cool. We're gonna let the best man win. I can't wait to learn everything from this new guy. Somebody asked McCarthy how he felt, and he told the truth about his genuine emotions was, it's another guy here to take my job. We'll see if I can stave that off. And then Murray, on their hand, probably wasn't lying, but he gave the polished answer because he's been in the NFL since 2019. That's my synopsis here.
And certainly you're not wrong. It reminds you of another former Viking, former Packer quarterback, Brett Favre, when they drafted Aaron Rodgers. Favre famously said, there's nowhere in my contract that says I have to get Aaron Rodgers ready to play. That's exactly what Brett Favre said famously in that rookie year of 2004-05 for Aaron Rodgers. So yeah, it's not overly newsworthy, but definitely a little awkward exchange there. McCarthy telling the truth, something that you didn't anticipate, because more often than not, it's, you know, it's so great to have a mentor like that I can't wait to compete with him. Can't wait to learn from him. He's been great to me so far. Even if that's not the truth, even if it's not saying it is or isn't, but even if it's not, generally you want to have that PR card or person behind you saying, hey, don't say that. Don't say that for J.J. McCarthy. Other news, Nolan Teasley introduced as general manager. We talked about the pecking order a little bit. We talked about the official hire. The press conference itself, those are always glad handing. Thanks so much to here. Thanks so much to there. My beautiful wife, my wonderful kids. What did you take away from that? And give us the update on Rob Brzezinski. Is he staying? Is he going? Who does he report to? What role does he have before diving into Nolan Teasley, the new Vikings general manager?
Okay, so Rob Brzezinski is staying with the Vikings. He's been in that organization since 1999. Like when Randy Moss was a second year player, that's when Brzezinski came aboard. I think it probably hurt a little bit for him not to get the big job, because he did a pretty decent job these last, 3 months. But he will stay within the organization. They really buttered him up yesterday during the event. Everybody said really shining things about Brzezinski. I think that was purposeful. He's valued in the organization. He's back to being with Money Guy. I bet you he gets a power bump because of what he has accomplished in the last 3 months. He didn't need to be more trusted, but I think he's even more respected. So it's a little sad that he didn't get the sit in the director's chair for longer. I have this paranoia theory, and you can probably appreciate this. I don't think Teasley is going to be bad or have a hard time, but I am utterly convinced that we're going to look back at this draft class, and it's going to be like the best the Vikings have ever had. And henceforth, after this one, we're going to get back to just either average or normal. I think we're going to look back and call Caleb Banks, Dominic Orange, Jake Galladay. We're going to call that the Brzezinski class, and we're going to wonder, why didn't we just keep Brzezinski? Mm-hmm. That type of stuff usually happens within Vikings history, and that's my latest theory about what's going to shake down here.
It'll be pretty darn interesting if that is the case, especially because you did keep Brzezinski, but he's not the key decision maker. They did clarify his role. He's going to report directly to Nolan Teasley, not to ownership, not to anybody else, not to himself, not having his own office in the corner. Rob Brzezinski, part of the front office, which is headed up by Nolan Teasley. Other news to get to from the Minnesota Vikings. What else went on this week that we need to know about?
Well, I still got a lot more to talk about, maybe in the next segment, about Teasley, and then I want to get back to the quarterback battle. But overall, we had OTAs, which I would consider successful. I mean, it's really hard to screw those up. There was the influx of cap space based on some previous roster moves. We talked in the first segment about June 1st being kind of a magical date on the calendar. The Vikings now have about $13.5 million in cap space to spend on a rainy day. We already covered the Myles Garrett trade that had reverberations all the way to Minnesota. You know, just kind of looking at, will the Vikings have to get into an arms race to stay like within the reach of the Rams? Will those teams have to conduct trades before the deadline? Will those teams have to go sign Joey Bosa or something just to compete with the Rams? Kwesi Adofo-Mensah got a new job title in San Francisco. He's now the vice president of personnel and strategy. There was a linebacker, a rookie last year from Penn State named Kobe King, who the Vikings strangely released in November. He was later claimed by the Jets. I want to point out that the Jets released him this week. So he can either come back to Minnesota, or if the Jets didn't want him, perhaps it wasn't some big criminal offense that the Vikings kicked him to the curb. And I think that's about it for all of the new stuff because June is so quiet. The thing I wanted to point out about Kyler Murray and J.J. McCarthy, and this is piggybacking on something that ESPN's Kevin Seifert wrote last week, that Murray looked so good at OTAs that even if J.J. McCarthy progresses on his next developmental step, it may not be good enough to knock off McCarthy or Murray in this camp battle. So let's say we get to July and August and we're like, hey, McCarthy, his mechanics look great. I mean, this thing could work. That might not be enough to dethrone Kyler, who has, to me, significantly better physical tools besides his height than J.J. McCarthy.
It was interesting, the one video clip that you saw. There's been a couple since that kind of refute this, but there was one video clip they put out last week where Kyler Murray threw the football and whipped his leg around.
Yeah.
J.J. McCarthy threw the football and drug his toe, like everybody's been teasing him about learning to do. Of course, everybody reads into that. Next clip you see a little bit different. But regardless, fun quarterback competition the remainder of the summer all the way into the preseason and regular season, which opens with the Micah Parsons-less Green Bay Packers. That's going to feel a little bit more comfy, cozy in the opener. Maybe the Josh Jacobs-less Green Bay Packers as well. Lastly, you said you had a little bit more on Teasley. Let's hit that now before our final break.
Okay. During the press conference yesterday that lasted about 30 minutes, one reporter specifically asked, you know, is this team ready to win now, or are we kind of looking at a rebuilding process? And to the surprise of no one, Teasley affirmed that this roster won 9 games last year, you know, sans Jonathan Greenard. He now plays for the Eagles. So if you were expecting the Vikings to ponder a rebuild, that's not happening. In fact, Teasley comes from the Seahawks, who are similar to the Vikings. They always remain consistent in the mix. The Seahawks haven't won less than 6 games in a season in 17 years. So they are just like the Vikings, that when they have a bad season, that means 7-10. So I would not expect anybody to light this roster on fire, even if this year goes pear-shaped. We learned, I think, Judd Zolgad from Score North, who, I don't know if he's been on this show before. He asked the blunt question, and we got the blunt answer that Nolan Teasley has final say in the 53-man roster, which is important because the buck stops with him, draft time, trade time, free agency time. We wondered if this was a triangle of authority approach that the Wilfs embraced for the first 6 years of their leadership back in 2006 through 2012. I think Kevin O'Connell has significant pull, but the buck will stop with Teasley. I want to point out, when Kwesi Adofe-Mensah would talk these last 4 years, he would usually tell you what his team was going to do. Yesterday, reporters were asking Teasley these really compound questions that were like, you know, 30 seconds long, and he'd respond with two sentences.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think we're going to get a guy who tells you what he's going to do. You're just going to have to wait and see. And then I'll reiterate the role of Kevin O'Connell from a couple standpoints here. I counted 6 or 7 times Kevin O'Connell was mentioned yesterday, and he wasn't even like on screen. So I think his power will stay front and center. I think they'll have a collaborative relationship with Teasley. And we also learned that Kevin O'Connell interviewed all of these guys. So Kevin O'Connell played a major role in picking his own boss. That should tell you all you need to know about how much the Vikings value O'Connell. And I would not expect him to take a back seat anytime soon.
Lastly, here on the general manager subject of Nolan Teasley, everybody's got a little ego in the NFL, no matter if you're a kicker, punter, all the way up to personnel people. Is there an opportunity for Teasley financially or trade-wise in the next 2-3 months before the season, early season, for him to make his mark? You know, he doesn't have a quarterback. He doesn't have a drafted quarterback or a signature Teasley move to start his career as general manager of Minnesota. Is there an opportunity for him to make a splash early on in the next couple of months with a free agent acquisition, signing, or trade?
I enjoy this roster so much as is that I don't think he needs to do anything seismic, nor do I think any team is really in a rush to get rid of 2027 draft picks because this class looks so sexy, you know, 11 months out. You can get an easy win that, you know, you and I could do if we were in charge after lunch today.
Mm-hmm.
There's edge rushers all over the place. Jadeveon Clowney, Joey Bosa, Leonard Floyd. If your team needs an edge rusher, they've got like 5 guys that can get you 6-7 sacks in a season. Now, we don't know if Jake Galladay, the Vikings second rounder, will be used in a hybrid capacity or if he's even ready for week one, you know, NFL. There is a rumor that Tyrion Ingram Dawkins, last year's defensive tackle, is going to be somewhat converted to an edge, a stand-up guy, you know, on the outside of the defensive line. If none of that is true, then yes, the Vikings need an outside linebacker. So I think Teasley could get a really easy win in the eyes of fans if your phone buzzed and it said, hey, Vikings signed Joey Bosa.
So certainly there's an opportunity out there. Big signings more often than trades at this stage. But we had a couple big trades this week in the NFL. Commented on them a little briefly already. But what other names could be on the move? ESPN's got an article of 10 names to know that could be traded in the weeks ahead of suddenly a busy post-June 1st offseason. We recap and finish up Minnesota Vikings Hour number 1 on a Thursday, coming up next on your Sioux Falls Sports Leader.
ESPN Sioux Falls gets you back to more of overtime with Burt Ramin on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls Sports Leader.
Right back with you, set to round out and wrap up hour number 1 on a Thursday. If you're new to the show, Thursdays are Minnesota Vikings Thursday for the entire first hour, 11 to noon with Dustin Baker of VikingsTerritory.com. Reacting to the trades, we already got your initial reactions to Myles Garrett to the Rams, Jared Verse to the Browns, along with some draft capital. Also talked about the Eagles and the Patriots deal. When it comes down to it, easy question, fun question this week around the water cooler. For us corporate types that report to an office every day, Rams or the field? Are you really confident in the Rams? Are you very confident in the Rams? Where do you sit right now? Because a lot could go wrong in an NFL season. We know that. What's your confidence level in LA, at least representing the NFC this year?
Very confident after the Myles Garrett trade because it's just filthy. Like, they just didn't need that.
And they might get Aaron Donald.
I mean,
I feel like that percentage went from 5%, 10%, which it's been since he retired, to probably 50% when the trade went down. And now with him commenting about it, I'm definitely thinking about it. Probably, I would say 70% chance he returns in some capacity this year.
My worst take of the week and maybe of the summer, Bert, you got to listen up here, is when I was doing that exercise on the Rams, I was listing out all of the players that are really good or great.
Mm-hmm.
And my worst take of the summer is there is an argument to be made that they don't even need Aaron Donald at 35.
Well, they've got a great young defensive line.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Not good, great.
Like, they don't have idiots on the defensive line's interior. So, in theoretically, if Aaron Donald was a shell of himself, the other guys might be better. I don't want to get that on record, but this is not a team that is hungry for a defensive tackle. That said, you would welcome him with open arms, demote, you know, the other guy and see what Aaron Donald can do. He has to entertain this. He's like, if there's any guy who would stay in shape for 2 years for a moment like this, it would be Aaron Donald. Let's face it. And if there's any guy that would make it work, it'd be Aaron Donald. So yeah, I would take the Rams. I have to look at the terms if we're really going to put real money on this, but they're adding Garrett is such an addition to a team that didn't need it. They already have all of the offensive weapons. And then on I think their defensive roster is better than their offensive roster. And then you have Sean McVay to boot as the head coach. So I would take them when we get to our Super Bowl segment. They will be my choice to win the Super Bowl. I think the Chiefs will be back. I don't think the Chiefs will be crappy 2 years in a row. So right now I'm thinking if I had to list it all out, it would be Rams, Chiefs. And then I don't know who I'd pick in that game.
Interesting stuff. Again, a lot of people like myself have the Chiefs back in the playoffs, mm-hmm. but maybe not playing for the Super Bowl. We'll do those prognostications with a lot more info coming up in late August, early September. Lastly here, when it comes down to OTAs, who's next to be traded? ESPN's got an article out there about trade candidates. Spencer Rattler's on the list. Alvin Kamara's on the list. Let me pull this up and look at the other names on there. But are there any names that you might be interested in from a Vikings perspective? Max Crosby, Kayshon Booty out of New England. James Conner, the running back for the Cardinals. Brandon Ayuk, that one's obvious. Kyle Pitts, even though he did get an extension or did get the franchise tag done. Other names, Rattler, Josh Sweat in Arizona, Kamara, Kayvon Thibodeau for the New York Giants, and Mac Jones, former Viking rumor mill Mac Jones. Any names out there piquing your interest?
No, because I don't think we will see the Vikings engaged in a blockbuster trade, and my evidence is this. If they were going to do that, they would have kept Jonathan Greenard. They loved Jonathan Greenard as a human being and as a performer, and the Eagles paid him 4 years, $100 million, which isn't like, oh my gosh, how did he get that much? If the Vikings wanted to get a big name and pay a big salary, they would have done that with Jonathan Greenard. Now, Noah Teasley may want to make his mark. I don't know if he's a trading fiend like Rick Spielman and Kwesi Diafoe-Mensah. So you could see something like Theo Jackson traded to the Commanders because Durante Jones now works there. Or you could see, hey, they upgraded at center. They traded for Aaron Brewer, like, you know, who's really good for the Miami Dolphins, who has ties to Frank Smith, the Vikings assistant head coach. So it would be something like that. Not a mundane deal because Aaron Brewer would be a big deal. But I don't see the Vikings engaged in a blockbuster, because if they had that philosophy, they wanted to spend big, they would have just kept Jonathan Greenard.
So certainly still a lot on the table for those Minnesota Vikings. Next week, the Baker family is on their way to Italy. A long list of sights to see, fun things to do. We'll get a full preview of that trip with Stone Baker on Tuesday, because they will not be in on Thursday for Vikings Thursday. We'll do Vikings Tuesday next week with Dustin Baker, Stone Baker in studio. Always great to have you. We'll do it again in less than a week.
Yeah, we'll see you in a few days. Thanks a lot.
Looking forward to that. That's Dustin Baker of DraftHuddle.com, VikingsTerritory.com, Vikes Now, the YouTube show, so much more. We'll take a break, come back, headlines and highlights. The Knicks find a way to win in game one. What is the Spurs mentality looking like heading into game two tomorrow night? Latest from the NHL, NFL news, Christian Watson, the right Watson, the future Hall of Fame receiver of the Green Bay Packers, got a big deal, 4-year contract extension this morning. We'll break that down, get you the good, the bad, the ugly before we're done on a Thursday edition of Overtime that continues after this.